Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today on the show, we're going to talk about a micronutrient that may not be on your list at all for fertilizing this year, but we're going to talk about the importance of why it should be. It's copper. So we'll discuss the benefits of copper in the plant, what you should look for in your soil, and just a few more little tips we've got for you today on this micronutrient copper. As always, if you've got a question for us or if there's anything you'd like to talk about that's happening on your farm, you can give us a call here, 844-44-AG-PHD. Again, that's 844-442-4743. You could also email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on X, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so I'll give you a couple of things with copper, and then we're going to get to the AgPhD mailbag right away here in our first segment. First of all, one of the things that we've learned since we've been comparing soil tests to yield over the last 5 years is there's not only a ratio of phosphorus to zinc, there's a ratio of phosphorus to copper. Now, it all depends on your soil test that you are having run in your soil test lab, okay? So I'll tell you what it is on our farm. This isn't necessarily what it should be for your farm, again, depending on the soil tests that you're having run. But anyway, 30 to 1, roughly, general ballpark. Malic 3 phosphorus to malic 3 copper, 30 to 1 for a ratio. So if you're at 100 to 1, 150 to 1, if you're at 3 to 1, on either end of that spectrum, your yield's going to be hurt, I'll tell you right now. So take a look at that ratio in your on your soil test, parts per million, malic 3 phosphorus, malic 3 copper, roughly 30 to 1. Now, if it's 40 to 1 or 20 to 1, we're probably still fairly good, but just so you know, general ballpark 30 to 1. The next thing is copper is kind of considered the disease nutrient. It is tremendously important if you want great disease tolerance. So if you've been having a lot of disease issues in all your crops, I'd really look heavily at what's your copper level in the soil? Should you add a little bit of copper in or get a micronutrient package when you're planting? Use a little bit of liquid that way. Should you do a little foliar feeding? I don't know. I'm just saying copper could very well be part of that. Oh, and I got one other thing for you too with copper. Copper is a key to basically the flexibility, the elasticity of your plant. So we talk about that with seed coats on soybeans or grapes. Or even one of the things we had Bill Brush in, consultant from out in California, at the Neil Kinsey seminar last month, and he was just talking about tree branches. If you've ever had tree branches snap in a high wind, or in, let's say you had an ice storm or something, odds are extremely high you just didn't have enough copper in that plant. Because if you have great copper levels, your plant, whether it's a tree, a corn plant, anything, it's going to be way more flexible. It can bend much more without breaking, and then it can come back. So those are some important things with copper. We'll talk about copper a little bit more throughout the show today, but right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
All right, Brian, here's one of the challenges I see with copper that you didn't mention. It's not always included on soil tests. So here's some tests that came in from Randy, and he wants us to take a look and make some recommendations. And Randy, for the most part, you got a lot of stuff on the soil tests, but I just noticed they only ran certain micros, not all of them. And that's something that I guess before Brian even starts looking at it and kind of giving you an overall ranking of some of the things that we would do, I would just say, man, I'd love to see a complete soil test. I'd love to have all those micros in there too.
Your pH to start with isn't bad. I see a 5.9 here, but otherwise we're in the sixes. So if you've got pH like that, I'm not that worried about it. That's always the thing that we're going to look at first. However, let's say that you were raising alfalfa. Well, then yes, we want that closer to 7. You do have a low of, I guess there is one here that's 5.5 pH. Would I throw a little bit of lime out there? Yeah, I sure would. As far as cation exchange capacity, and here's the big thing too, with all recommendations we're going to make in a soil like this, it's really going to be pretty easy to change ratios because we're talking about a 3 or 4 CEC. That's not quite pure sand, but just about pure sand. So it's not going to take much to change anything out there. For example, Right now, it says, oh, hey, our base saturation potassium, I've got one here that says 4%, okay, which immediately sounds pretty good, but there's only 67 parts per million there. That's not much. That's not enough to raise a 250 bushel crop of corn, for example. So we're going to be taking a hard look at that. Now, I get it that, okay, so it says cropping sequence here, sweet corn, onions, potatoes, snap beans. These aren't crops that we typically talk about here on the show, but soil is soil, and good levels in soil are going to help of all nutrients and balance in the soil. It's going to help you no matter what crop we're talking about. I will say this. When you have soil that's that light, you want to see that magnesium percentage getting up near 20%. Right now, it's not even close to that. In a lot of these cases, I mean, we're talking 11. Oh, I guess it is 15 here in a couple of them. But we want to get a little bit more magnesium out there. So if you need lime, if you're down in the fives for pH, use dolomitic lime. Otherwise, you're probably talking something like magnesium sulfate. But to Darren's point, yeah, we've got tests on boron, manganese, and zinc. We don't have any tests here on copper or iron or molybdenum, chloride, some of those other things. When you have really light soil, I mentioned chloride there. Chloride is leachable, just like sulfur, just like nitrogen, boron, and for that matter, in your soil, as light as it is, potassium is something that's a little bit leachable too. So I'm going to be paying attention to all those. I'm going to be spoon feeding them. I'm going to be applying them multiple times each year. So those are the main things, I guess I would say. The one nutrient on here, well, two nutrients, phosphorus and zinc, they're not really leachable even in that light soil. So I'd be bumping those. We want that zinc level roughly 1/10 of your phosphorus, so that's real low. And I'd probably be pushing the phosphorus a little higher. You're as low as 28 parts per million here. So if it's me, I'm pushing that a little bit. So yeah, just a lot of work to do, but you don't need a lot of anything because it's light soil, won't hold a lot at any one time. So you just have to keep maintaining that and continuing to spoon feed things. Stay tuned. We're going to talk more about copper right after this.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
Want a product that will give you nitrogen all season long? Then you want to try Envita. Envita gets directly into the cells of the plants, and it's easy to apply, foliar or in furrow. Envita provides the flexibility you need for your farm practices. Whether you want to reduce your nitrogen and maintain yield, or maintain your nitrogen and increase yield, Envita fits your farm. Envita SC formulation is OMRI registered. To learn more about Envita, visit azotic.com. That's AZOTIC.com.
For the smallest investment with the biggest impact on yield, upgrade your planter with Germinator closing wheels from Farm Shop MFG. To see how we stack up against the competition at a fraction of the cost, call us at 712-520-6051.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior Strip Tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at soilwarrior.com.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit valent.com/maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about copper on today's program. It's a super important nutrient for your crops, and it's one of those that it doesn't take a whole lot of copper to sufficiently supply your crop for the year, and it also doesn't take very much to build up your soil so you have enough copper for the next 10 years or more. But it's one that if you run a little bit short on, there's a number of problems that you'll see out in your crops, including lost yield. So we're talking about that today. We're also keeping our phone lines open if you have any questions or you just want to talk about something going on your farm. It's 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll start off with our friend Lee Lubers. He farms in South Dakota, as we do. Lee, thanks for joining us.
Hey, glad to be here.
Talking about copper on today's program, and I know this is one you've mentioned before, just with your crop rotation that has made a difference. What do you see when you run short of copper, and what are some of the benefits you're seeing by adding a little more?
The first time we figured out we had copper deficiency, it was a very, very extensive lesson. We had it on 9 fields of winter wheat where it looked like frost damage, but we knew it did not freeze earlier. It did not get late season frost. And any local agronomist I had to look at said, oh, you have frost damage. I started doing my own research and realized by pictures and description that copper deficiency mimics looks very similar to late season frost damage. And then we started looking at it and looking at our soil levels and looked at some early tissue tests. And yes, we were short. And that's as we were pushing up into higher yields, up over 100 bushel. And all the fields that had copper deficiency, we lost 10 to 15 bushels an acre on that year.
Wow. Yeah, that is expensive. And to build copper up, just out of curiosity, how much did that cost? Did it cost less than the 10 to 15 bushels that you lost one time?
We view copper as low-hanging fruit, a high ROI. We view it as very important in our soils and with our crops. It's we learned the hard way years ago, about 15 years ago, 12, 15 years ago. And we kind of go by the, actually we were addressing it via dry in our blend. And then the first time I saw Neil Kinsey speak, we were doing the same approach that he advocates, and it's been working great for us.
Yeah, do you like to get it out there in the fall? Do you like to get it out there in the spring? Or do you just say, man, as soon as we figure out we need it, I don't care when it is, we're getting it out there?
We're getting it out there. And the one interesting thing, and Neil has pointed that out too, that while like we have CECs on a fair amount of the ground in the 20s, and you will see crop response, but you won't see it in your soil tests for, you know, it could be 18 to 24 months before you see it starting to move the needle there, but you'll immediately see it in the next crop.
Yeah, that's a good tip, because I talk to farmers all the time, like here, we just have gone through a few dry years in big parts of the country that growers have said, man, I did XYZ fertilizer blend out there trying to build up my levels. I don't see it really taking hold yet in my soil test. But if you do notice it in the crop, like you're talking about with copper here, that just getting it out there, your crop will find it. And it takes just a little while for it to start showing up in the soil test. We can all live with that as long as the crop looks good. It doesn't look like it's got frost damage or is falling over, or we see, now, like on soybeans on our farm, we would see compromised seed coats where the bean would just bust right through the seed coat. Those types of things. We saw a lot of issues not having this one right. We're talking with Lee Lubers here about copper and important nutrient for the crops. Lee, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Hey, anytime.
Got Galen Beer with us right now with AgriLiquid, and Galen, Lee was just talking about how this really is kind of low hanging fruit. It's a high return on investment. If you're short in copper, you got to get it out there. What are some of the ways to make that happen?
I mean, there's a variety of ways, Darren, and I think not every grower has the same viewpoint as Lee. I'm glad to hear Lee's adopted that, you know, as part of his program, but I think if a guy is doing a dry spread, at some point to put some copper sulfate in there and try to start to nudge that soil test numbers, never a bad thing. But you can include liquid forms of copper. Obviously, we have our MicroLink copper. You can include that in a top dress. I've not tried it in a wide drop or a side dress on corn, but I wouldn't be afraid to attempt that as well.
Well, Lee and his brother are pretty fussy. They really want to find out what's going on and fix it going forward. I always respect that about those guys. And when you see your short in copper, getting it out there is a big deal. But it doesn't move very well in soil. A lot of farmers in our part of the world are in reduced tillage situations. And they say, man, I put it out there on top and it stays where it's put. If I get it down in my 2x2 or something like that, or even dropping it in furrow, at least I'm getting it down where I'm not worried about losing it ever.
Yeah, it doesn't move. I mean, all of the cations are difficult to move in the soil, and copper being one of those. And that, I think that's why I always try to piggyback it with one of the anions like nitrogen or sulfur, or ideally if you were going in a top dress or a side dress, you might piggyback it with both of those. I feel like it's a little bit more effective when in combination with something like that than as, you know, a standalone.
You know, we do see in some of the blended products, like take your Micro 500 that's been out for a long time, or your newer products like a Micro 1000, where you've got a blend of a bunch of different micronutrients. We see that being a pretty popular option with growers. And I would assume, Galen, for the most part, at the rates that are getting used, that's a, hey, we can feed your crop this year, no problem. Just get this out there at planting time.
Yeah, that's. I think copper is expensive, as you know, and I think that's one of those things that's hard. If you were to approach someone and say, "Hey, you need a few pounds of copper," it almost becomes overwhelming in a fertilizer budget. And you know, it's easy to kind of move it down the list and maybe knock it off the list in a year like this year. If you're putting out a multi-nutrient product like Micro 500 or Micro 1000. The cost of copper doesn't jump out at you, and you can kind of go, okay, well, I'm glad I'm getting some copper in there because, you know I need it, but as a standalone, I don't want to go purchase it. And, you know, to Lee's point, and I think you made the point as well, it takes a while to see copper on a soil test, and that lag, you know, it almost prevents someone from saying, hey, I'm going to go do a 15-pound application of copper sulfate and then wait 2 years and see that show up. So, you know, for growers, using those multi-nutrient products is an easy way to get some of that nutrient in the crop.
We look at a lot of different crops, Galen, and many farmers will say, well, you're focused on corn and soybeans, and Lee was just talking about his wheat crop, but this is a nutrient that we need everywhere. It was interesting just talking to, well, some of the agri-liquid folks, actually, that are around the country talking about some of the specialty crops that, wow, if we don't have enough copper, that's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a bad day on those farms, too.
Yeah, you know, copper, at least seeing a yield advantage, but copper, you know, to a large degree helps build proteins that will provide defense mechanisms within that plant. And those are a little more subtle for us to pick up as growers, and partly in crops like corn, we found ways to compensate. I mean, we do fungicides at planting or all throughout the season. Well, you know, ideally, if you balance your program out and included nutrients like copper, that plant might defend itself. But obviously, when it gets into things like vegetables, certainly it's very visible there, and it's well worth that investment. But I consider on protein crops like wheat, soybeans, and things like that, certainly you're going to see the biggest bang for the buck. And not that it's not important on corn, but corn is a starch and carbohydrate producer. It might not be quite as obvious in a corn crop, although you would still see benefits with a healthier plant.
Talking copper on today's show, and glad to have Galen Beer with us with AgriLiquid to talk a little about that. Galen, thank you so much. Really appreciate the time and the insight today.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. We'll talk more about copper, and we'll take your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Can you predict the future? I can't. That's why when I'm planting soybeans, I treat with Heads Up seed treatment. With more than 15 years of research, Heads Up offers proven protection against both white mold and sudden death syndrome. So no matter what the year throws at you, you've already taken that first step to be prepared. Don't let your beans suffer from disease when they're just starting to look their best. Tell your seed dealer you need Heads Up seed treatment. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an agroliquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on army worms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty along with my brother Darren. We are live in the Morton studio today. We're just talking a little about copper and taking your calls and questions. We're going to get back to the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a minute. Before we do, I just want to talk about how you fertilize with copper. So there are a lot of ways to do this, and you can get copper in a lot of different things. So for example, you might get a low dose of copper in manure, in compost. It's also possible, for example, like for us, we get water treatment lye. There could be some copper in there. So just look at whatever you're putting on your farm and see what you have for a copper level in that. Now, if you want to go buy commercial fertilizer, you can certainly do that. And we've talked about foliar feeding, using a little bit of planting. Those things are really good. I will say this. A lot of people worry that, oh, I got to build my soil and my whole level's low and I want to do some broadcast and build everything up and it's so expensive. Yeah, copper and zinc, not expensive. And the part of the reason why is, well, I'll put it this way. Even if we use a Malic 3 test and we say, all right, I'm going to build to 100 parts per million, I should say, of phosphorus, that means even in a 10 to 1 ratio, that's only 10 parts per million of zinc. That's all you're trying to get to, 10. You might be at 1 or 2 or 3 right now. So you don't have much. We're not talking about many pounds on zinc. And it's even less on copper. I was just talking earlier in the show, roughly 30 to 1. So let's say you were at 100 parts per million on phosphorus. That's 3 1/3 parts per million on copper. Let's say you're at 1 right now. It doesn't take much to build your soil up if all we're talking about is raising it 2 or 3, or for that matter, even 4 or 5 parts per million on copper. The one thing I will tell you is if you want to use copper sulfate, yes, there's dry. And yes, you can buy copper in blends and things like that. But we've used liquid on our farm. We've taken copper sulfate, we've thrown it in water. And if you use copper sulfate and you mix it in water, just make sure that you clean that sprayer out literally as soon as you're done leaving the field. You've got to get it cleaned out right away, because copper sulfate can create a problem in your spray tank. Just trust me, clean it out right away. As long as you do that, it's great. We've done that. And I'll tell you this too, whether we're talking copper, zinc, or heck, even phosphorus, potassium, anything, use variable rate applications. We were just going through our nitrogen variable rate applications on our farm. Just this morning, we were talking about what we're going to spread out there. If you don't use variable rate, here's the problem. You're going to overdo it in some areas. You're not going to have enough in other areas. So that's my number one piece of advice always with fertility. Do good, other than obviously do a good job with soil testing, but use variable rate. It pays. All right, let's get back to the Ag PhD mailbag.
All right, I got this one in from Nate, and he said, hey guys, I got some soil samples here. I'll send you the spreadsheet. It's front and back of the sheet there. He said, I just farm about an hour north of you guys. So here's a summary of the grids from this farm that we own, and I was wondering if you'd give me your top recommendations what to fix. It's very flat. Corn and bean yields have been kind of stagnant now, especially for how heavy a ground it is. Just wondering, could I get your list of the first 13 things to fix that you talked about on your shows last week? He's got most of it's pattern tiled, 70-foot centers, 42 inches deep, and they've got a pretty decent budget on this one since they own it, and they don't have any cash rent to pay. And just like us, coming off a really bad drought here. But just kind of curious what you think.
Okay, so first of all, the average for soil pH in this field is 6.8, which sounds great. And you go, oh, I'm set on pH. But here's the challenge, and I haven't looked through every last number, but it looks like on the high side, I see as high as 8.1, and on the low side, I see as low as 5.2. You need to manage those things differently. So on the high side, we'll talk about that in a second, but on the low side, it's pretty easy. If you're in the fives, you got to put some lime out there. With cation exchange capacity, and here's the thing too with these tests, I don't have all the information in all the tests. In other words, there are only a few where all the information is given to me. So in other words, cation exchange capacity, calcium, magnesium, base saturation, copper, boron, things like that. So it looks like he's got parts per million of K and phosphorus, organic matter, pH, and zinc. We got that in all of them. Okay, continuing on. So when I take a look at this and I see, or at least most of these, it looks like for cation exchange capacity, we're in the 20s, if not even the low 30s. We got a heavy soil here. So, and it's in South Dakota where it doesn't rain, or barely. So that tells me we can load stuff up. So in other words, like phosphorus, potassium, zinc, copper, we're not worried about those things disappearing. And heck, even boron and sulfur, I'm not nearly as worried about losing them as compared to if we were in an area that had light soil and a lot of rain. So I will say this. Not only does he have high cation exchange capacity numbers, so we're talking heavy soil, he's got real good levels of organic matter. On average, 4.7% organic matter. Here's why that's great. So I just told you a minute ago, we were going through our nitrogen recommendations for our own farm just this morning and looking at how we were going to vary the rates. So here's what we look at. We soil test and we look at what do we have for carryover nitrogen. Now, so Rob Fritz, agronomist, we've had him on the show here many times. He and I were going through this and he goes, I want to only figure half that nitrate's going to be there. Now, for me, I'll be honest, we've had 3.5 years of drought. I'm figuring almost 100% of that carryover nitrate is going to be there, which, by the way, unless I missed it here somewhere, I don't see carryover nitrogen on this test. And a lot of people just automatically figure, oh, it's coming out of soybeans. It should have 40 pounds there. Well, sometimes we see 40 pounds. Sometimes we see 140 pounds. Sometimes we see 10. So I'm still testing for nitrogen. Anyway, the other thing that we look at and where I was going with all this, organic matter. If you got 4.7% organic matter, you know how much free nitrogen you're going to get in your soil here in South Dakota? I'd figure at least 100 pounds and maybe 150 pounds of free nitrogen. So what I'm saying is a lot of people will go, well, I'm going for 200 bushel corn, so I got to put 200 pounds of N out. I'm just telling you, if you do that, you probably put an extra 100 pounds out there you don't need, or at least 50. So I'd be taking a real hard look at that. That's, you could, Darren and I this morning, we're talking about, all right, commodity prices are down. What do we need to talk to people about? Where should the cuts come? And immediately people are going to, well, I'm not going to spray a fungicide. And I go, well, why? If you're gaining a whole bunch of yield on fungicide, why would you cut that? Don't ever cut stuff that's making you money. Even if corn price is $4 compared to $7, for a lot of the gains we see, it's still really good. But anyway, the number one thing that Darren and I were talking about this morning is fertility. The average guy that we work with is spending, on corn anyway, $150, $200 an acre. It's so much. And we see a lot of nitrogen overapplied and a lot of nitrogen that's not variable rated. So if you look at that organic matter thing, that's a big deal. I'd make absolutely sure that I'm factoring that in. But anyway, just some other things. If this was my ground, what would I look at? Well, we're running Olsen phosphorus test. There's no chance in the world I'm running an Olsen phosphorus test when my pH is down in the fives. We just don't think it's super accurate. So I'd run a Malic 3 or I'd run a Bray test or something like that. But I'm going to always focus a lot of my dollars on P and K. Your K is really low. 2.1% base saturation K. You got to get your potassium levels at least double what they are today. And I'm dead serious. And especially when it's ground you own, it's going to be there. It's going to be there for a long time. Get the K up. That has to change, number one. And phosphorus probably needs to be double where that's at as well. So those are the main things. Once you raise those, just don't forget about, hey, I need to boost my copper just a little bit. Get that to 2 or 3 parts per million at least. Zinc, definitely. You got to get that level up. Get at least to 5, 8, 10, something like that. You got to boost the zinc. So, I mean, honestly, there's almost nothing that I see on this soil test where I go, yeah, I need to cut that. No, it's almost everything. I need to continue pushing that. Last comment I got, when you lime on those spots that are down in the fives, use calcitic lime, not dolomitic lime. You don't need any more magnesium. You got an excess of magnesium right now. So just make sure that you're always putting on more than adequate sulfur, not just what the crop needs, but a lot more beyond that to start flushing that magnesium out over time, whether that's a little bit of gypsum, ammonium sulfate, something like that. Stay tuned. We'll get to more of your questions next.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Higher yield potential starts with the season-long systemic disease protection of Xyway brand fungicides from FMC. Xyway brand fungicides protect corn crops from key foliar diseases and support physiological benefits that help develop healthier, higher yielding corn for a difference you'll appreciate at harvest. Visit your FMC retailer for an at-plant advantage. Always read and follow all label directions.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at Verify.com. That's VRAFY.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Farmer Amaranth. 4 counts of yield theft, resistance to groups 2, 4, 9.
You ain't got nothing on me, man.
We've been surveilling you. And now we've got Tough 5EC, a tank mix partner that'll make sure you and your gang of resistant weeds never see the daylight again.
Crack down on repeat offenders. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix. Learn more at toughonweeds.com. Always read and follow label directions. Tough is a registered trademark of Belsham Crop Protection.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio at agphd.com. I got this one in from Jeff out of Montana. He said, I sent you guys a question earlier for corn, but we do have an in-furrow setup on the planter. Looking at running MegaGrow or 10340 with a zinc and a biological, something like that. Do you have any recommendations? We've got higher pH ground, low phosphorus, and I'm going to give you a few soil samples here that I summarized for you.
Okay. So first of all, you said rented ground. This is corn. So I assume we're talking 30-inch rows. When we talk rented ground, we usually propose one of two things. Either number one, you talk to the landlord, build up all the soil, and either have a long-term lease or have some kind of agreement so you can get some of that money back for all this fertility you put out, because you're not going to use it all this year if you broadcast it. That's strategy one. Strategy two is just band it. So I'm sure that's why he's looking at 10340, but problem with 10340, it's a high salt fertilizer. You can't use much. 3 gallons per acre, that's about it. And that's if that's all you're running. And he's proposing throwing some zinc out there too. So yeah, 3 gallons even is pushing it a little bit.
I should have probably mentioned this is also irrigated just in case that
sure,
comes up.
That helps. Yeah, and that helps. I mean, that does help safen it a little bit. But nevertheless, I still worry about that high salt close to the seed. Now, if it was, let's say, 2x2, that helps. You could use a higher rate. If you want a strip till, you can use an even higher rate. So that's why we talk strip till so much here on the show, because we have a lot of guys that want to go for higher yields. They want to put on a lot of fertilizer. Well, fertilizer is salt. So you got to keep it as far away from the seed as you can, yet close enough so the roots can still extract it this year. Anyway, so just real quick, let me run some I'll throw some numbers out, and then I'll tell you what my suggestion would be on what I would do for the ground. Cation exchange capacity 25 to 35, so heavy ground. pH 8.2, that's high. Organic matter is about 3%. Base saturation calcium is around 75%, magnesium 16 to 19. So we're pretty good on all that stuff. Potassium's 2.5%, that's too low. You want to be working on a build program over time on potassium. Again, I understand it's rented ground. This is where, again, I go back to either band it or talk to the landlord, because if you raise that base saturation K to 4%, it's going to take you a while to extract that out, a few years probably. Sodium levels, slightly concerning. 1.5 to 3% is not terrible today, but I'm always going to be thinking about that. If you have irrigation and you don't have some way to treat the water, can't find a better water source, whatever, and it's a little on the high side on sodium, I'm looking at two things. Number one, do I have good drainage? And I'm concerned because this is heavy soil. It's Montana. Odds are it's not tiled. So if it's my ground, I'm tiling it. If it's irrigated and it's heavy, I'm tiling it. But then if, let's say that I do have good drainage, the way you flush excess sodium out is with sulfur. Here's the thing. The sulfur levels are already 100 to 500 plus. And Darren, I assume that's parts per million, not pounds per acre, right? So double that for pounds. So if you're at 500 plus already, and I don't know how plus we are, plus, a lot of labs don't even tell you how high you actually are. So what I'm saying is you've got at least it's pounds. Okay, 500 pounds. But nevertheless, it's still concerning to me because that should leach out. It should leach out. And if it's not, that means we got a drainage problem. I'm putting tile out there, that sulfur is going to pull your sodium out with it. So if you don't do this, you won't have a problem immediately. And again, I get it. The challenge is it's rented ground. So I'm going to the landlord, and I'm literally showing him the soil tests. And I'm explaining, look, here's the issue we're having. We're irrigating out here, but as you can see, our sodium is building right now. Our sulfur is building. Our soluble salts are starting to build. These leachable things aren't leaching away. That's not good. So over time, what's going to happen if this continues, we keep irrigating, we keep raising crop and everything, sodium keeps building, and pretty soon our soil's not going to be very productive. And 30, 40, 50 years down the road, our soil's going to be dead. I don't want that. You don't want that. Here's how we fix that. We put tile in the ground. So, and then I guess what I always tell landlords, my first way to approach this, and there are several different strategies, and we've used many on our farm, and all our rented ground is now tile. But the first strategy I always use is, all right, look, here's what I'm proposing. This is going to require an investment of $500 to the acre. But what are you getting putting your money in the bank today? Probably not much. How about if I give you a return of 5%, 7%? Even 10%, whatever it is, you decide. But I'm just saying, if for easy math, 10% of 500 is $50. I pay $50 an acre more rent each year. So it's an immediate return on your money and a guaranteed every year return on your money, plus the fact that your ground's going to be worth more. And we know your ground's going to be worth a lot less if you have a tremendous sodium buildup over time. So just some other little things here. Micronutrients. We were talking today about copper. You need to get the copper levels up a little bit. You're at 1 part per million. That's not enough. Manganese at 2. Now, I don't know with manganese. Here's the thing. We haven't talked about manganese really today, but we do mention this very often. If this is a DTPA test on manganese, which I'm guessing it is, I'm guessing it's a DTPA test, that's not good. It's not very reflective of what you actually have for manganese in the soil. I'm running a Malic 3 test on manganese. That'll give us a much better handle on that. But anyway, zinc's really low. It's at 1 part per million. It absolutely needs to be higher than that. Your boron's not terrible. It's 0.8 to 1.5 parts per million. But here's the thing. You've got a lot of calcium in that soil. I mean, a lot. So you can handle more boron than that. Your calcium, when it's at 5,000 parts per million, theoretically, you could have your boron at 4 or 5 parts per million, and it'd still be very safe to the crop. So all these micros, all the micros, I am addressing a little bit, continuing to build here over time. That's what I would do. So you can see why I say you better have a conversation with the landlord. Otherwise, all these things I'm suggesting, like literally almost everything, you got to have more. If you can't work out something long-term with the landlord, you're going to have to band it. And if it's me, I'm deep banding, because with 1034-0, you can't do a whole lot. All right, Darren, what's next?
All right, I got two different fields here, and I'll give you the first field first, and we'll start with that one. So this is from Tonya down in Arkansas, and she said, hey guys, my brother and I are just stepping out on our own. We purchased a piece of ground. This one we are going to set up for some soybeans, very likely here, but could also be rice. It's 100 acres of ground, mostly flat. Just kind of curious what you think about that. And then I've got another sample I want you to look at that with some ground we're going to put some rice on that we're renting.
Yep. So pH is in sixes, looking pretty good. I just say, and I'm going to go down the list on how this soil lab has it reflected, and I'll just give quick comments. Other than, we got to always first take a look at how heavy is this ground? Well, the cation exchange capacity is in the eights. So that's the first thing we need to be thinking of. And the reason why I bring that up is I look at phosphorus. Okay, that we absolutely need to build. He's running a Malic 3 test. He's at 20 or 30. That needs to be at least 100. So you got to raise that Malic 3. But potassium is the next one. It's at 100 parts per million right now, which isn't nearly enough. And base saturation, you're talking 2 or 3. It's really low. But
is that even worse? Is it pounds per acre?
No.
Potassium?
No, it says parts per million.
Oh.
Yep. So these are all parts per million here. And anyway, where I'm going with this is potassium in my ground where we don't have rain, it's never leaching away. In your ground, it is going to leach away. You have way more rainfall than us, and you have way lighter soil. So I just kind of keep that in mind. Yeah, I want to build my potassium, but I can't go nuts. So work on building some potassium, though. Beyond that, yeah, your sulfur is almost non-existent. Boron's going to be a constant fight. You got to keep adding sulfur, boron, and nitrogen just because they leach away. So keep adding. Our topic today was copper. You're at 1 part per million. That is not enough. So work on getting that to at least 3, maybe 4, something like that. You'll have much better success. So those are my main things.
All right, Tony's got another field that we'll take a look at right after this short break. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/Facebook.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health through awareness, guidance, and action. Together, we can uproot the stigma.
Your farm data platform might let you manage your fertilizer plan by helping you set sample points, determine management zones, or create fertilizer recommendations. With Verify, you can do all that. But what Verify does that no one else can is take yield data straight from your combine, correlate this info to soil test points, and immediately generate variable rate fertilizer maps based on your nutritional goals. Whether you want to build soil levels, balance your field for uniform nutrition, or maintain fertility levels by simply applying what you removed at harvest. And with full integration with John Deere Operations Center, Verify can send recommendations directly to application equipment, no matter the color. Sign up for your Verify account today at verify.com and keep your farm moving. That's VRAFY.com.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out CaseIH.com.
What's the difference between John, who bought Enlist One herbicide and Instinct Next Gen nitrogen stabilizer, and Tom, who bought Enlist One and Instinct Next Gen and used True Choice? Only about $5,000 extra in Tom's pocket. Choose True Choice and get up to 10% back. It's really as simple as that. Start saving at Corteva.com/save more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD or by email radio@agphd.com. So Tony down in Arkansas had sent a couple of samples in. The first one was on some ground that they own, but the second one is on some rental ground. And she said, we plan to grow rice on this ground as it's not ready for a soybean crop. What are your thoughts on this one? It's a 30-acre field. There are a few low spots out there. Just really curious what you think.
Okay, so I found it interesting with these rice recommendations that they sent along with it, that they wanted them to not apply any lime before the rice. And it says here, if the alternate crop needs limestone, lime to a soil pH of 5.7 after the rice crop. Here's the challenge. Let's say that I wanted to raise corn, or corn especially. Corn does not function well at a 5.7 pH. We've been able to prove that time and again. I don't know exactly how much yield you're going to lose, probably 20%. So it's real tough. In other words, what I'm saying is you'd have to find the right rotation partner. If you're telling me, oh, I don't ever want my soil pH to get above a 5.7, I'm going to tell you, I better make a darn lot of money on that rice if I'm going to raise corn after that and suffer a 20% yield hit. So that's my number one concern. Now, some people will say, well, how about if I just go with some pelletized lime, low rate, and I feed the corn or I help the corn that way? Sure, that's a possibility. We've actually had some people do, AgriLiquid has this calcium product, Liberate, that we've actually done as a seed treatment or in furrow, and that could help, something like that. But I'm going to address it a little bit differently if I say I don't want to raise my overall soil pH, because to me, that's a foreign concept. I want my pH up, and I don't like a 5.7. But anyway, so that's probably the number one thing that I would point out here, because we're talking about pHs 5.4 to 5.6. I often mention it. Blueberries, for example, they like a little bit lower pH. But you got crops on the other side of things like alfalfa. Oh, I mean, if you raised alfalfa in this field, you'd have 10% of your expected yield if you had a 7 pH. So just keep that in mind. Crop rotation is going to be unbelievably important because of this low pH if you don't want to raise that. So beyond that, these tests, I find it interesting. The last test he gave us, it was all in parts per million. These are all in pounds per acre. Personally, I love pounds per acre because I can understand that as a farmer and I don't have to run any conversions. So here's the problem though. 20 pounds of phosphorus is all that there is out there. 50 to 70 pounds of potassium. I'm just trying to say, there's low and then there's deficient. These are all deficient. You have no phosphorus and no potassium basically in that soil. So where I'm going with this is it's going to cost you some money. You're going to have to raise that P and K. They're just flat out way too low. When I look at other things too, so we were talking on the show today about copper. All right, you're at 1 pound of copper. That's not enough. No crop's going to be happy with that. You want to get that up to a few pounds.
It's rented ground now. Here's the big thing is, can you get a long-term deal?
Yep. Yep. So,
get the landlord to take part in some of this.
Yep. So it's a real challenge. And, you know, that's the thing, too. A lot of people, there are some landlords out there that they're only looking at, hey, I just want maximum cash rent. I get that. I mean, sure, I'd probably look at that too. But the flip side of that is whoever is renting this has to make money or they're not going to continue to pay you that kind of rent. And so the more you understand soil tests and the more you can explain the soil test to the landowner and say, look, here's what's happened over time. I don't know who rented this ground, but it's incredibly depleted. There's nothing left out there. So that means that the ground is worthless. And I don't mean worth less. It is worth a little less money. It's not completely worth zero. But I'm just saying we can make this better. And if you have better crops, and also on any farm auction, if you do build it up, if let's say they want to sell the ground 10 years from now, they just show people, hey, look at the soil test. We got tremendous fertility out here. That's worth something. Right now, you don't. There's just nothing for fertility out here. So, I mean, literally, you could put everything out there for fertility, and it would sure be helpful. Other than you're in great shape. There's a lot of iron and a lot of manganese. There's a fair amount of calcium. But beyond that, there isn't much.
All right. Well, thanks for the question. Sorry. We really appreciate that. Don't let Brian be a downer. I'm excited for you guys as you get started here. Yeah, but there's going to be some challenges here.
And, you know, we just have to be realistic with these things. I mean, we're just going to shoot you straight. I mean, you have no P and K out there. So you have to look at what's my crop going to remove. And I'm putting even a little bit more than that out there because you got to make sure that the crop has enough every single day of the growing season of each nutrient or you're in trouble. So and try some things out if you want. But I'm just saying you don't have any P and K out there. You need quite a bit.
All right. Well, thanks for the question. We appreciate that. Get this one in from Cora, who is over in Eastern Iowa. She said, I'm curious if you guys have any recommendations to keep snakes out of a garden area. I have a love for gardening, but a hate for snakes. Any tips that you've got? You know, one thing we talk about with different pests like this getting into our lawns or gardens is remove their food source. So whatever the snakes are going in there to get, they're going in there for food. So what if you figure out what the snakes are going for, get that out of there. If you have any snake predators around, owls, hawks, those kinds of things, you could promote owls and hawks in your area.
I don't know how you're going to do that.
Okay, here's a few other things. So from a fertility standpoint, just things you could easily
apply. How about we just be happy that they're around there, like lizards down south. And things that eat bugs are good. Things that eat tiny little rodents,
it could
in my
be,
opinion,
and I don't
good.
Know. Maybe in eastern Indiana there's some scary snakes. I'm not sure. But
I don't know.
I know you can do this. You can make the environment not as friendly for them around the outside. You can replace grass with gravel. You can put lime around the outside. They don't like that. Or sulfur around the borders. I was talking to my wife about this, and she said, well, what plants don't they like? Garlic and onions. So you could plant garlic and onions. They contain sulfonic acid that repels snakes. Or even chop up garlic and onions and mix it with some rock salt and spread around the border. There's just a lot of different things you can do, and quite a few different things you could try. If you just look online, there's a lot of other people in the same shoes as you trying to get rid of snakes. So, yeah, try and make the environment around the outside of the garden unfriendly for them. Have some predators around there if you can, and get rid of their food source if at all possible. Hey, thanks, Cora. We appreciate the question. Good luck with your snake battles. Wesley had a question here about drones, and he said, okay, guys, you talk about drones for fungicide use. That seems to be the big thing in the area here, too. But what about for foliar feeding, post-emerge or pre-emerge, particularly when fields are a bit too soft to get out there? There are some other applications drones could be used for. I'm a no-tiller. I'm dead set against, as much as possible, being on a damp field with anything. So what do you think about other applications for drones?
Well, I think there are a lot of things that are untested right now. So, I mean, we're working on it, but how good are we going to do for applications? We'll see. A lot of people want to talk about NDVI, and I was just meeting with somebody this morning who had worked for a drone company that they were super excited about. I mean, they can do like millimeter resolution, like they can detect bugs and little things out there, but the cost is high. So, I mean, here, let's put it this way. Is it important to know exactly how many bugs are out there, or you walk out and you see, oh yeah, I got a problem, and the insecticide cost me $2. I'm spraying anyway. I'm gonna throw $2 worth of stuff, or $1.75, in my spray, as opposed to what's gonna cost me $17 an acre to even find out exactly how many bugs I have. So cost becomes an issue with things like that. So I don't know where that's going long term. Am I excited about potential? Of course. We love new technology. We'd like to see how we can make things better. I guess I just am a little uncertain how it's all going to pan out with the whole drone market, but I guess we'll see how it goes in time. A lot of people are talking about the applications, though. I mean, replacing planes, replacing self-propelled sprayers, replacing pole-type sprayers with the drones. Maybe. I mean, we could spray 1,000 acres in a day with a sprayer. It'd take me one heck of an army of drones to get 1,000 acres done in a day, I think.
Yeah, there's a long ways to go on the technology, no doubt, but it is kind of exciting just to even have some of these different options out there.
Yep.
Well, we had a fun time talking about copper. Make sure you're testing for copper on your farm, and make sure your soil test includes it. Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.